you want to know how to use commercial music in your next YouTube video without the fear of getting copyright strikes, well, today's episode is especially for you. Okay, let's do this.
Welcome to Tube Talk, the show dedicated to helping you become a better video creator so you can get more views, subscribers, and build your audience. Brought to you by vidIQ. Download for free at vidIQ.com.
And welcome to another episode of Tube Talk. My name is Liron Segev. I am a tech blogger, a YouTuber, and the director of customer success here at vidIQ, where every day we help creators big and small level up their channels, get more subscribers, more views in less time. Look, we all know that music is really, really crucial to our YouTube videos. I mean, try watching an intense car chase sequence on mute and it kind of doesn't feel the same anymore. We know that when we get an upbeat, fast tempo in our music, it gets our audience excited to watch for longer. And as much as I love production music, man, I wish I could use popular commercial music without getting that copyright strike. So now what do I do? Well, today's guest is Paul Sampson, who is the CEO and co-founder of Licked, a platform that helps YouTubers legally use music without the fear of copyright strike. Paul, I hope I got that right. Welcome to Tube Talk.
Good to meet you, Liron. Well, we've met before, but good to speak. You got that right. I'm happy with it. Yeah.
All right, good. So we're off to a good start. Paul, you founded this company on behalf of consumers, on behalf of YouTubers. You're taking that fight directly to the music label and say, look, guys, you have to work with us on this. But before we get into it, let's understand your background. Tell me, who is Paul in a tweet?
In a tweet? Oh, as in, like, in short?
In 280 characters. Do it.
Blimey. Paul is a Greek Cypriot first generation immigrant who has a lot of ambition and has spent the last 15 years putting music to picture in traditional media, films, TV, advertising. The last four of those was really the genesis of Licked, where I figured actually the real opportunity and the problem that needs most solving is social video and the ability to garner legal rights for music there.
Oh, okay. So would we have known anything that you've worked on the big screen?
Oh, yeah. I mean, so I started putting music to picture in 2005. And then in New York, and then I moved to LA and became head of US for a production music company there. And I worked on major motion films and trailers and HBO premium content series. Everything from small branded content online to films that you've seen in the cinemas. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'll give you a perfect example. Right, when I was in 2000 and end of 2007, I was in LA and I get a call from a local music supervisor. Right, a one or two man shop. Right, his name was Thomas Golubich, and his shop was called Super Music Vision. Mm-hmm. And it was a music supervisor's house. And he says to me, hey, Paul, I need to arrange a blanket with you, a blanket deal for unlimited amounts of production music for this new TV show on AMC. And I was like, okay. He said, you know, it's a new show. It's the first original programming that AMC have ever done. And so it's not a big budget. I need to do a blanket for filler music so that I know what I've got left to license the hits. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, well, you know, AMC have only ever done repeats of Gone with the Wind and Dr. Zhivago. You know, I was like, what is it? What is this show? He said, it's a show about a chemistry teacher who gets cancer and in order to look after his future becomes a heroin and meth producer. And I was like, right, what's it called? He was like, it's called Breaking Bad.
Breaking Bad, yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, wow, okay. I was like, well, you know, I did a deal for him. And you don't know how these things are going to go, if it's going to become a big show or not. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, there's one example straight out of the gate.
Love it.
And it went on to be a huge success. And Always Sunny in Philadelphia, I licensed the theme music for 10 years straight.
Someone's going to ask me this question later, so I'm going to ask it to you now. Yeah. Why Licked the name? What is Licked?
It's a really good question. All right, so all the other services, I think, have really dull names, right? And there's a reason for that. It's because they all started out in traditional media, right? And so the business name has to explain what the company does. So audio network, epidemic sounds, jingle punks, right? There's always a word about music and a word about business, right? We were the first company to focus solely on creators, solely on consumers. And so I wanted more of a brand. Now, the original name of the business was Hooked, H-O-O-K-D, because as a music brand, I wanted to be hooked on the platform. There were guitar hooks. Nice. It worked quite well, right? We lost that name 2 weeks before the platform launched.
Wow.
In a trademark dispute with a social media company. And I had to rebrand. And I came up with Licked for a couple of reasons. One, guitar licks, right? Like a short solo on a guitar is called a lick. But also, certainly in the UK, if something is licked, if you've got something licked, it means problem solved, right? And I was like, okay, well, we're solving a problem. We're in music. Everyone that works in music licensing is a failed rock star, right? We all want to work in a cool brand and like not wear a suit and do cool stuff. So it was a bit edgy and a bit risky, but you know, people got it, and that's why it's called Licked.
Oh, and risky and edgy is what gets you exposure. So I guess it worked.
Exactly. And it kind of sums up the attitude of the team, right? I tell everyone, you're not taking no for an answer. We're right about this. And if a rights holder says no to you, find out why and get me in the room with them. And we'll win this fight. But
all right. So, Paul, we've spoken about a couple of terms, like we throw in the word production music. Yeah. I think it's important for people to understand that there's a couple of differentiators in terminology. There is royalty-free, there's copyright-free, there's production music. Can you tell us what each one of those is? And maybe there are others we need to know about, just so that we're all on the same page, because I've seen these terms used interchangeably. They're not actually the same thing. So let's start there. What is royalty-free versus copyright versus production music? Where do they all fit in?
Okay, so let me start by saying then that, because it's a really interesting point you landed on here, because they all, except for copyrighted music, all of the others are versions of production music. So to define production music, it's music specifically created and composed for the purpose of being used in various elements of production, right? Whether that's film, whether that's trailers, adverts, or online UGC content, right? Mm-hmm. So a production music company will say, we need X amount of albums worth of music created across multiple genres so that people can easily and simply license it into content, right? In a one-stop shop format. Mm-hmm. Underneath production music, there are various different types of production music. And by that, I mean royalty-free production music is still production music, right? Or royalty-free music refers to production music. The only difference is, and the reason I said this was interesting, is because the term royalty-free is completely irrelevant to the YouTube space. It doesn't mean anything to a YouTuber. It's been adopted by YouTubers because they associate the royalty-free music they use also as being copyright claims free. But those two things do not mean one another. It's just a coincidence, and people have seen that term and then they presume royalty free means copyright claims free. And that's not the case. The royalty free part of royalty free production music is only relevant, Liron, to TV production companies and broadcasters. And what that tells a broadcaster, let's say BBC or ITV or whatever it might be, NBC, CBS, any of them, it just means that this particular production company has commissioned the music from a composer and then paid that composer a sum of money that allowed that composer to waive his rights to future royalties on the broadcast of that content. Now,
okay, well, before we move on, so just so I'm clear, so I am the composer. A company comes to me and says, listen, I need you to create me this set of music, but you can't own any part of it by the time the job is done. It's a paid for gig. Here is some money. Give me the sheet. Give me the music. I now own it. You have no future claims to anything to do with the score that you've just written. Correct?
Yes. Although they may still agree to split the license fees. But typically, when a piece of music is played on TV, you pay for the sync right, which is the master and the publishing. But then the broadcaster is also liable for a second royalty, right? Which is, they call the mechanical license and the performance rights. And it's those mechanical and performance royalties, the royalty-free music is free from. So okay. it tells a broadcaster, if you're a small broadcaster just setting up shop, then you go, okay, well, I can budget a bit better, knowing that I'm not going to be hit with secondary royalty payments and I have to join ASCAP or BMI or PRS or whoever it might be.
Okay.
So in that instance, that royalty in this landscape, that royalty would have been payable by YouTube, not by the YouTuber. So okay, let's start with the production company, the production music company that I worked for from 2005 to 2010. Was very high end, right? So we would commission music from actually quite big music names, right? But let's keep that out of this for the moment. And we would say to them, we own the music once you've written it and we've bought it from you. But any money we make from it, we're going to split with you on the license fee 50-50, right? So if I put this in an advert for £1,000, we're going to take 500, you're going to take 500. And we'll let you know when that happens. Then, when the piece of content airs on the TV channel, the writer would get 50% of the publishing and I would get 50% of the publishing. But then the performers on the track and the writers would also get paid each time it was viewed, a separate royalty. Right. So each time it was played, right? Whereas the sync fee, the license fee, is a one-off fee for unlimited fees. Now, that means that the broadcaster has to pay out each time that piece of content is played on their channel. There was a really small royalty paid out to the composer and the musicians on the track. If I have a royalty-free production music company, the broadcaster does not have to pay that and does not have to report that music use to ASCAP or BMI or the PRS, right? And what that means is it's kind of low-level production music. You don't get many high-end composers agreeing to that deal because royalties are sort of the bedrock of their future.
Sure, absolutely. And by production, are we talking about, like, I don't know, we call them instrumentals. Now, there's no voice, it's just basically beats.
Pretty much. There's some production music that has vocals on. But
okay.
Yeah, you're talking about Audio Network, Epidemic Sounds, Extreme Music.
That kind of thing. Okay.
Yeah, all of those companies.
Okay, cool.
And then you've got above that, you've got copyright or commercial music, right?
Yes.
Which is the music we know from the charts, from your favorite artists, everything you know on Spotify, and so on and so forth.
Okay, and now we have a term called copyright claims free. What is that?
Well, I mean, it's not a genre of music. It's just that right up until we formed Licht, if you used a song from the charts or the song that was on Spotify by a real artist owned by a label and publisher, it would be recognized by Content ID and you would receive a copyright claim on your content. Right now, most of those claims are what they call monetized claims, which means that the label isn't blocking your content, but it isn't allowing you to monetize.
Yes.
The content, right? It's just saying I'll leave your video up, but you didn't get a license for this. And as a result, it's an infringement on my copyright. And so if this video generates any revenue, we're taking that revenue, the rights holders, the label and the publisher, because it is an otherwise an infringement, right? And instead of going after 5 million
yes.
video creators a day, right? We're just going to try and earn some money off of this. Now, in order, claims-free copyright music is not a thing, but Licked, the music that is on Licked, on my platform, is from labels and publishers, right? It's from Universal Music. It's from Warner Music. It's from BMG and 7,500 other labels and publishers. But when you license that music from us and then put it in your YouTube video, our software ensures that you don't receive that copyright claim, that you, as the video creator, are able to monetize your video, right? And the software is informing the label that actually this use of this song, as opposed to all other usages of this song in all other videos, this one by this user was legally licensed to the Licked platform, right? And our software interacts with Content ID to inform it. This is the difference between this usage of this song and every other usage of this song.
Okay, so let's take, to make it clearer for the audience as well. So let's talk about, and before we dive back into this, because I don't want to leave it there. Yeah. We're going to get back into the system, trust me. I just want people to understand YouTube, the copyright system. Right, we have a claim ID. Then we have a issued a strike because you use somebody else's content. Then you have the ability. Then the person has the ability to decide. Look, I don't want to take your video down, but I want to earn money. Let's just talk about that for a second. Can you take us through a typical YouTube copyright system, how that works?
Yes.
And let's use an example. I have a video I've just uploaded. I'm using the latest insert artist name here.
Yeah.
That artist is not happy with me, or the label's not happy with me doing it. What happens now? Let's go through that steps before we bring it back to how your system does it.
All right. I'm going to go back one further step.
Okay.
Right. I'm a label. I've got an artist, and I'm this new album is being released today. Right.
Okay. Okay.
I make sure that that album is live on Spotify, on Deezer, on Apple Music, iTunes, all the available music DSPs.
Mm-hmm.
And within that, I include YouTube. Now, in the YouTube content management system for labels and for publishers, when you upload music, you have to assert a policy on that song. And you have four choices of policy. Monetize the video if you hear this song in it. Don't do anything but track the video when you hear this song. If you hear this song, take the video down if it already exists prior to me registering the music. Or if you hear this song, block all videos. So to recap, that's monetize, track, take down, block. Now, 98.5% of all the world's commercial music is set to monetize, which means your video will play, but the label and publisher are taking any revenue generated. There are a handful of artists in the world, either the artist, the management, or the label, or all three, feel that music should never appear in any video except for the artist's official channels, right? And they will put that music as with a block policy, meaning if you try and use it on a YouTube video, your video just won't get published. Hmm. So that's the starting point.
Okay.
Every single song that you've ever heard has one of those four policies on them. 98.5% of them have the monetized policy on them. Hmm. Now, so then that music is registered in the YouTube music CMS and it's memorized by something called Content ID, which think of Content ID as YouTube's own version of Shazam.
Okay.
When you upload a video, it scans that video for any audio fingerprint or music waveform that it can hear. And then it matches that against a fingerprint it already memorized for the when the label put the music in the system. And it says, hey, I recognize this song. It belongs to you, Universal, or you, Sony, whatever it might be. What's the policy on this song? The policy is monetized. Okay, I'm letting the video play, and I'm making sure that all revenue from this video comes to you. Does that make sense?
Yeah, completely. Okay, so it's great to actually hear it from the other side's point of view. Because us as creators, we don't obviously know those options exist. Now, at one stage, YouTube had a great website. You went to youtube.com/music_policies. You can put in any track that you want, and it will tell you what it will expose, which one of those four options.
Yeah.
That has now been taken down for some bizarre reason. So we can't even be proactive in doing this.
Yeah.
YouTube, you got to love them sometimes, but sometimes, man, that's just crazy. So now we understand it from the music point of view. Now, question, what happens if I'm filming, I'm in a coffee shop and there's music playing in the background on the speaker, or I'm in an amusement park and Disney music is playing, which they're notorious for being really hardcore with this.
Yeah, I mean, you should try and avoid that at all costs, because if it's not part of your plan or not integral to your content, if it's loud enough and it's in there long enough, anything more than sort of 8 to 10 seconds, probably, maybe even shorter than that, Content ID will recognize it. And bear in mind, 99% of claims or actions by Content ID are automated.
Right. But
very few of the copyright claims that exist in the world were manually asserted, right? Content ID operates at quite a high recognition level. Occasionally, these people have teams that go through and go, oh, did it miss anything?
Mm-hmm.
Or anything we need to manually review, right? But most of the time, it will happen within a few minutes of you uploading your video. You'll see, hey, we recognize this content. We know you haven't licensed it. And so you're going to get a copyright claim on the content. So, and that can happen even if it's just in the background and it's loud enough.
So good practice here is to upload something unlisted, leave it for a while, and then see if it actually triggers anything anyway. So that's just a bit of a sad thing. Okay, so now that's the YouTube side of it. Now let's swing it around. I am looking for some cool music. I found a nice SoundCloud account and his big bold letters say, feel free to use my music in your videos. I then do it. It blows up. It gets a million views. And then all of a sudden I get hit with a copyright strike from the same artist. And lo and behold, I go back to his SoundCloud account, and he has taken away that one line that says, use my music for free. Am I pretty much screwed at this stage?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, basically. I mean, there are, in the same way that the major labels, Universal, Warner, Sony, and the likes, that they have these big teams and they operate, you know, their own music and they look after it and make sure it's protected. Lots of distributors round up lots of independent artists, unsigned acts, and say, hey, we can get your music because it is still commercial music, right? You're still putting it on iTunes, but we can help you put it on Spotify and Deezer and Tencent and all the other streaming services all over the world. Why wouldn't you do that, right? And they round up, you know, maybe 1 million, 2 million, 5 million songs from independent unsigned acts, and they distribute them and they make their money by doing that at scale, right? So even if each song only earns them £10 a year in YouTube UGC revenue, if you've got 1 million of them.
Sure. Thank you very much.
Yes. So a lot of these independent artists on SoundCloud, they will be looking to earn money. And so they will sign up with these distributors. And the guy on SoundCloud might not know anything about YouTube and Content ID. He might never heard of it.
Right.
But his distributor is registering it in the YouTube back end and putting a monetized policy on it, or even a takedown policy on it. And that SoundCloud musician might not know that those things even exist. So
don't do it.
you could find that out by doing the unlisted action that you spoke about before.
Right. But
again, it's just good practice to license a song from somewhere that says, A, we've got the rights for this, and B, even if something does go wrong, we can help you. You know, you're not left to your own devices.
All right. So big red flag, just by doing a Google search for royalty-free music, which is typically what somebody would type into the search engine, that is a very, very dangerous practice. You might be okay for a while, but as soon as that artist gets signed to a label or a distributor, then everything changes. And then your video gets taken down, you get a copyright strike, or it's a performing really well on your channel, but all of a sudden, all that revenue just goes elsewhere. So again, unless you actually own a license for that, the best practice is simply not to use it. End of story. All right, so now let's bring it back now to Licht. So Licht, as I understand it, as you started describing earlier, and I want to dive deeper into this, I have a song. Let's call it Song A, big artist, just launched. Everyone's super excited. I want this in my next YouTube video. Scenario one is I simply take that song, insert it as my background music, and I upload it. Scenario two, that song happens to live on your platform.
Yeah.
And scenario two, I upload that because I'm part of your system. What happens in the two different scenarios?
Well, the short answer is this. In scenario A, you get a copyright claim, right? And scenario B, you do not. In scenario A, the label and the publisher that own that song are monetizing your video. In scenario B, you, the video creator, are monetizing your video.
Okay. So how does YouTube then know that in scenario B, to say, hey, I am perfectly legally allowed to use this song, that obviously I'm not going to pick up the phone to Warner and Sony and say, hey, hi, I'd like to strike a deal with one video for one YouTube video. That's what you guys have done. How does YouTube know that you've done that?
So it's a really good question. So the answer is that before we set out, the first thing I did before I founded Licht was a friend of mine who was a developer and I took the YouTube certifications, right? And we learned the YouTube API, we learned Content ID, and we learned the YouTube CMS. And what we did was we built a piece of software, and we call that software Vouch, because Vouch literally vouches for our users, right? Now, just to explain Content ID again, when Content ID recognizes the song in your video, it immediately asserts the copyright claim, right? Because it's automated. And all Content ID is doing is presuming that you do not have the rights to use that song. And it can presume that accurately because until we arrived, there was nowhere to get the rights for that song.
Right.
So I know you didn't license it because A, there were 14 different rights holders on this song, right? There's the label that owns the recording and there's 14 different publishers that represent the 14 writers on this song. And there's nowhere to get all of those rights wrapped up in one license. So that's what happened pre-Licht. What Vouch does, when you create an account with Licht, you're storing your YouTube channel ID with us, right? And so you're saying, hey, I'm creating a Licht account. That means youtube.com/channel/Paul Sampson is a verified Licht user, right? Then when you're searching our platform and you say, hey, there's song A, I like song A, I'm going to license it. That song has a code, and that code is different on Spotify and Deezer and Apple and so on, and on YouTube. But the YouTube code maps to all the others. So when we receive the song, we store the YouTube code, right? Mm-hmm. When you license it, we now have evidence of a license for that YouTube song code against your specific channel ID. Now, when we sign a label, we give them our software and we say, you have signed a deal with us. You have to put this software in your YouTube CMS. And every time you deliver us a new song, you put the Licht or Vouch policy on that song in the YouTube CMS, right? So by integrating our software, they get to inform YouTube that this song now lives on Licht, right? That's what the software integration enabled you to do. And so now, when you use that song on YouTube, Content ID will recognize it. And it triggers our software. And it says, it basically, imagine this conversation. Content ID says, hey, Licked, vouch. I found this song. I'm about to put a claim on it. And listen, you tell me I shouldn't. Here's the channel I found it on. And here's the song I'm talking about. And we say, okay, hang on a minute. Yes, that user is a Licked user. Yes, they paid to license that song. Do not claim that video. And it reviews every video in the world that has that song in it, across all the songs we have, across all the videos on YouTube. And whenever it's not our user, or it is our user, but they didn't license the song, it says to Content ID, go ahead and claim that song. It's not, right. it's not licensed. But if it's our user and they paid to license that song, that video won't receive the copyright claim. So it's literally vouching for Licked users, saying, no, they acted legally. They've got the rights. And tell the label and publisher, for this video, they're getting paid through the license fee that the YouTuber created with us.
Okay. So literally vouching for the fact that you may use this song correct. In that particular video.
Correct.
Okay. And just to be clear, if I'm a Licked user and I choose a specific song, it actually means I use it a specific song in a specific video. It doesn't mean I can use it across 13 or 14 other videos. It's one song per one video, correct?
Correct. So one license of the song, one payment of a license, buys you the right to clear a copyright claim, essentially, across one video. Right, not retrospectively. You have to do it before you
put the video. Yeah, sure.
But yes, if you said, right, I'm going to buy this song four times, you could then put up four different videos with that one song, and vouch would clear four licenses worth of copyright claims for you.
Okay. Now the important question is: I'm a Licked user today. I've licensed the song today. I've used your system for 3 months. Now I've decided, you know what? I need to take a break from YouTube. And I'm not going to renew my services with you or anybody else. I'm off the platform for a year. I'm backpacking around the world. I don't know. Yeah. What happens to that license? Does it now, have I bought it in perpetuity, or have I bought it only whilst I have a valid subscription with you?
So the former, you bought it in perpetuity. It doesn't matter if you never use Licked again. You've paid for the right for that song to live on your channel forever, right? In that video. Licked, we don't operate as a subscription service. So it's never the case that, well, if you leave us or you start using someone else, that suddenly we're going to invalidate all of your licenses. This is an a la carte service. You can come to Licked, create an account, license one song one time, never use us again, and that video will still remain clear.
Okay, well, so that's a very, very, very important point here, because a lot of the services that are out there, you've got to read those terms and conditions very carefully, because some of them say that the second you stop paying a subscription fee, basically, you're done for. With Licked, I'm actually buying a license as if I would go to the shops and buy a carton of eggs. I'm buying it once, and I'm buying it for that one video. And I'm buying it as and when I need it. You do not pay a monthly fee for anything until you purchase a song. And then you pay for based on the number of views you anticipate to be on your videos.
Yeah, look, exactly right. Look, I think there's an important distinction here, right? Like, A, it's a really cynical business model to say you can keep all the money from your videos while you're signed up to our service, right? And perhaps we would earn more money. But that is to say that I want to create a really cynical solution that holds everyone hostage. Someone might do that in the future. Who knows? I don't know.
Right.
But that veers away from what is actually a central mission that we're on, right?
Yes.
Like I said, I was putting music to picture in traditional media for years. And everyone I licensed to, whether it's an ad agency or a TV company or a film trailer company or a film studio, they're all underpinned by production companies, right? That's your end client. Mm-hmm. What happened, Liron, was about 5 years ago, I realized that 2.8 billion people had a production company in their pocket.
Right.
Right?
Exactly.
And I thought, actually, if you wanted to do something really special in this space, stop scrabbling around for a limited market, right, with a finite number of production companies and broadcasters. The real opportunity here is that whilst almost every single production resource available is now democratized down to consumer level, mm-hmm. right? Whether it's your iPhone or your Android phone or your Canon or your laptop, right? You can film and edit and do all of that yourself, same as a production company.
Right.
The only thing, the only production resource that had not democratized was music licensing.
Yep.
And so my mission is to democratize music licensing to consumers. And if I say, well, that could only happen while you're a member of LICT, and then the moment you leave us, we're going to screw you, then that's not true to the mission. We recently signed both Universal, the number one label in the world, and Warner, the number three label in the world, right? I started those conversations in 2016. I've been fighting the fight for creators for 4 years on my own. In fact, our fourth birthday, the day I incorporated LICT, was November 1st, 2016, which at the time of recording is 4 years and 2 days ago. Yeah.
Wow.
So, you know, we only signed Warner 5 months ago. It took 3.5 years. So imagine if I have to get the other 15 publishers. Now we're doing that, right? We have signed now almost 7,500 labels and publishers. And the amount of music on its way to LICT is insane. So we, just to give you an idea, someone like Epidemic Sounds, which is production music. In fact, it's royalty-free production music, right? Mm-hmm. It's a good solution for YouTubers. Right? I think what Epidemic Sounds have done is a brilliant model. They made their money in traditional media licensing, hence the royalty-free labeling of the music, right? Mm-hmm. But they also provide a claims-free experience for creators. But it's production music. But because they have to own the music, they have to commission it, someone has to make it, they have to approve it, and they have to buy it, it's lengthy and time-consuming and expensive to build that catalog. So they operate on about 35,000 production music tracks. We put up 35,000 in a single day, three weeks ago, because three or four contracts came in at the right time. Right. We started this year on 10,000 tracks. We're currently on 86,000. We'll be at 150,000 songs by the end of the year. My team is targeting 1 million label and publisher-owned songs live on LICT, claims-free, by the end of 2021. Right? Mm. Now, that is a result of the bigger the contracts you sign, the more music they represent. And for every publisher I sign, I'm cross-referencing their catalog against the label I just signed, and it frees up another 5, 10, 15,000 songs, right? And so we keep going, keep going. If you can imagine the data matching that's happening behind the scenes there, it's insane.
Right. Absolutely.
But like I said, it's about us hitting the mission. And I met you at VidCon, right?
Right.
This year. I'll tell you a story. I was there the year before last. Last year, 2019. And I met a creator. I met his manager. His manager called this. I won't name the creator, mm-hmm. but he called the creator over and said, "Dude, you're not going to believe these guys are doing what we said someone should do. They're creating commercial music claims free for YouTubers." And he was like, "Oh my God, that's amazing! How are you doing it? And you know, where is it?" And I told him, and then he said to me, "Do you have ASAP Rocky?" And I said, "No." And he literally turned and walked away.
Lovely.
And he was like, I don't care. It's nothing. And I think the point I'm making here is we are fighting the corner for creators. Right? And I've been doing it without much support for 3 years now, right? Or 4 years, having these conversations. And what I've said to the music industry is, listen, there is opportunity here to work side by side with these creators, right? That there was a mutual win here. and every song we put out, more YouTubers will sign. Well, if creators don't use this and get behind it, then we'll never get the artist that they want. Does that make sense? It's almost like every license that you generate with Licht is a protest vote to the current state of affairs with the music industry. It's every time you search for ASAP Rocky on the platform and we don't have him, we store that data and we take it back to the labels and we go, well, this is who they're searching for.
This is who they want.
Yeah. And suddenly we are moving to a more data-led music acquisition strategy for the business, right? Because we're able to say to them, right, it's been up a couple of years now. Here's the historical search data on the platform. Here's where you can win. This is the genres that YouTubers typically search for. Here are the most searched for artists, right? These are the types of content that the people searching the most are creating. This is the size of their audience. And we're now starting to win more quickly because there are compelling data sets that we can now take to the music industry to make this, make copyright claims for YouTubers a thing of the past, consign them to history once and for all. And that's the mission. Democratize music and enable licensing for social video creators, because that's the new audience. That's the new media. And it's untenable for me that the only production sector in the world precluded from working with the biggest artists in the world is YouTube.
Yep. Well,
and that's what we're trying to change.
And not anymore, because you're here to fight the fight for us, as I said right at the beginning. All right, Paul, this has been awesome. I think a lot of us were confused about the various terminology and how everything kind of splices together and what it means. So this has been really, really good eye-opening, and especially to see it from a music point of view about those four categories, really, really good to understand it. Because the more we understand, the better we can act. And that's just the most important thing. So if people want to find out more information, how can they get a hold of you? How can they see the website? Where does Licht operate? Just give us some links we can follow. Everything will be in the show notes, so you guys don't have to remember it. You can just go down into the show notes and click on it. Hit us up with some links we can check out.
Okay, cool. Well, look, I mean, from a personal level, my Twitter is at Sampson Paul, SAMPSONPAUL. But and I always want to hear from creators, right? And garner more support and have those conversations. From the company perspective, on all socials, everything, we are at Get Licked. So GETLICKD. There's no E in Licked. At GETLICKD. And the platform, the service, is at lick.co.
Paul, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate you hanging out with us on Tube Talk and sharing all this amazing information.
Lewin, it's a pleasure. VidIQ does amazing stuff. I'm a big fan of what you guys are doing, and we're delighted to be a part of it.
Fantastic. Okay, thank you guys. And for the rest of you still hanging out here, don't forget to hit that subscribe button in your favorite podcast application so you can get all this info coming to you every single week. Don't forget to share this episode with at least one other creator who's perhaps dabbling in some, let's just say, not the right way of doing music on their YouTube channel. This is really going to save them a lot of time, a lot of effort, and a lot of headaches when those videos get demonetized and they're not earning a single cent from all their hard work. So please share this episode with your other creator friends. And as always, we'll catch you on the next episode of Tube Talk. Thanks for hanging out.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Tube Talk, brought to you by VidIQ. Head over to vidIQ.com/tubetalk for today's show notes and previous episodes. Enjoy the rest of your video making day.